What is the soundtrack of your life? If you could find one song that would tell you who you are, what would that song be?
That's the question that starts off Respect, a musical journey of women. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'll talk with the woman behind Respect, Dorothy Marsick. She was teaching at Vanderbilt University when she started thinking about the themes in top 40 music and how they reflect the changes in our society and the roles of women. That turned into a blockbuster musical, which is touring Iowa this summer, being performed by Iowa Summer Rep, the University of Iowa's professional repertory theater company. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Respect, a musical journey of women, tells the story of women since 1900 using top 40 music, songs that reflect the times during which they were written. The musical is touring Iowa this summer, being performed by Iowa Summer Rep, the University of Iowa's professional repertory theater company. Later in the hour, I'll talk with the director of the show. But with me now is the woman behind this musical, Dorothy Marsick. Hello, Dorothy.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
And when this journey began for you, you didn't start with the idea of mounting a musical. What was
Not
it?
At all. Right?
What was it that made you start thinking about the lyrics and messages being communicated by women and to women in top 40 music?
Well, it started out with just being interested in music in general. I had moved from Prague, Czech Republic. I was a Fulbright scholar there, to Nashville, Tennessee. I was teaching at Vanderbilt. It was a Music City, USA, and I thought I would take advantage of being in Music City and figure out how to use music to teach my leadership seminars. And that went so well, it took me about 8 or 10 months to figure that out, that when I was asked to give a talk about equality of men and women at a Baha'i conference in Florida, I thought, you know, I'm going to go see if I can find some songs that illustrate the concepts I'm talking about. And I went back to the beginning of popular music, which was around 1900 all the way up to the end of the century, and looked at the songs that women sang to see what was the change and how they were depicted. And I just found remarkable results. They went basically from codependent to independent, from someone to watch over me to I will survive. And it was something that nobody else had looked at before, so it was quite interesting.
Well, and being in the world of academia, you started looking further into this. How did this project evolve? Because obviously the musical didn't happen right away, but there's also a book project as well.
Yes. Well, when I did this presentation it's actually December of 1999, down in Orlando, Florida, at this Baha'i conference, people went crazy over it. And they went to the conference organizers and they said, you have to put another session and we want to bring our husbands and our wives and our sisters and our friends. So the only time they could find was after the conference was over, and the room was packed to the gills. People were hanging from the rafters, and there was this energy about looking at the journey of women through music that nobody had seen before or heard. And it was very uplifting because it ends on a positive note. And I realized I had something there. So I was started to get invited all over the U.S. and around the world to give this little one-woman show. And within a few months, I had a book contract, and I started recording CDs. And
You singing?
I took singing lessons for 5 years, and I took singing lessons for maybe 2 or 3 years before this actually happened. So I was, never get a recording contract, but I like to say, as management professors go, I was a pretty good singer.
As management professors go, all right.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure you're not giving yourself enough credit there. But so you started traveling around the world, giving this talk and singing these songs. Mm-hmm. And at some point, you realized that you were not only telling the story of women in general, but your family, women in your family. How did that epiphany come about?
That was a very interesting transition because in the beginning it was really, well, this is what the songs were. I had slides up that showed how women were dressed and some historical events, because you can really map historical events onto where the songs went. For example, when women got the right to vote in 1919, just a few years after that, one of the top songs was Someone to Watch Over Me, which I have thought was sort of a reaction. At the time, there was all this real fear about, oh, what's going to happen? These angry feminists are going to take over, and people wanted some security. This wouldn't happen, and so Someone to Watch Over Me was one of the hit songs. Well, so I was doing this talk looking at the songs and how it mapped onto historical changes. And once, a couple times, I had a picture of maybe my grandma or my mother up there, and people would come up to me afterwards and go, I really love that when you have your family pictures, because that helps me relate to my family. So gradually I started putting more and more of my family, starting with my grandmother, my mother, my aunts, and me, and then my three daughters. It spanned the whole century and into the new century, and it created a nice what we call dramatic conceit for this show of looking at through the eyes of the four generations in my family of how music has changed how we see ourselves as women.
Well, let's go back to your grandmother's story, and then I want to hear about some of the songs that you feel reflect her story. Tell her story.
Well, we start with my grandmother had five children and married to my grandfather, who became an alcoholic, and she threw him out. And so we have the song, Won't You Come Home, Bill Bailey, the woman kicks him out. And then, but many years later, he contacted her and said he wanted to get back together, and he'd quit drinking. So she went down to Chicago, picked him up in her Plymouth, found him on Skid Row, but he had changed. He quit drinking, and they got remarried. And she said to me, I still love him the way I did back in the beginning. And so that story is told, and then one of the singers sings, Can't Help Loving That Man of Mine. And then we move into the 30s and 40s. It gets to my mother and getting her first job in the factory during the war, and women had some power because men were off fighting, and women had some chance to have their own authority and their own agency, as you might call it. And Blues in the Night came out. You know, my mama done told me, a man is a two-face. I mean, you didn't find songs like that hit the charts before that.
Interesting. Well, let's pause here and listen to a little bit of Can't Help But Loving That Man of Mine.
I love my Mr. Man, and I can't tell you why. There ain't no reason why I should love that man. It must be something that the angels done planned. Fish gotta swim and birds gotta fly. I gotta love one man till I die. Can't help loving that man of mine.
And Dorothy, listening to that song, and I think about so many of the other songs that were popular around the same time, there was this sort of idea being conveyed that women didn't have control over their own lives. They couldn't even understand their own lives, and they couldn't control their destinies. I mean, those are pretty common themes.
They were very common. In fact, the songs up until the 60s, about 65% of the songs had all of those themes that you just mentioned. It was about wanting him no matter what. Fanny Bryce had this song, My Man. She says, two or three girls says he, that he likes as well as me, but I love him. I don't know why I should. He isn't good. He beats me too. What can I do? I mean, that was one of the most popular hits of the 20s. And just many songs like that that were, we were without our own agency, and our lives revolved around men. But if you think about it economically, women, very few of them worked outside the home, and so they were dependent on men economically, which created this also an emotional dependence, because women weren't allowed to do things for themselves. I mean, we couldn't even vote until, you know, after World War One.
And these songs, were they being written by women? I know they were being performed by women, but are they coming from women as well?
Not too many of them. I mean, Dorothy Fields wrote a lot of songs, but she started in the late 20s and 30s. There weren't very many women songwriters. And that is one aspect that I didn't really study, because I was looking at what economists would call the demand curve, just which songs sold and how were those, how did that shape how the culture saw women. And that would be a very interesting study for someone to look at what women wrote and what men wrote. I think you'd probably find that there'd be a mixture of songs, even if you look at, you know, Madonna or Christina Aguilera, their songs, they have strong songs, that they have some codependent ones. But what I was interested in was what, which were the songs that were getting the most attention. Back in that time, they measured it by sheet music sales and radio sales. I mean, now we have the Billboard charts. So I was looking at what were the songs that really touched a nerve in the culture.
Right, so it doesn't matter who was writing them. These are the songs that were resonating with audiences and resonating with women.
Yes, yes.
And in those early days, and as you said, up through the 50s and 60s, there was a lot of codependence in this music, is how you describe it.
Yes, and very interestingly, the end of that, or the beginning of some of the strength, happened in the 60s when the women's movement began. So there, you can really map the change in music with what was going on in society. But there was plenty of codependent songs up through the 60s, and even now,
right.
I've read so many articles about codependent songs now, but it's reduced from 65% to maybe 20% of the total top 40 songs that women sing.
Well, we need to take a short break. Let's go out with one of those classic codependent songs before we run out of time. I'm talking with Dorothy Marsick. She is the woman behind the musical Respect, a musical journey of women. It's touring Iowa this summer, being performed by Iowa Summer Rep. We'll talk about that show in particular a little later on. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
I must follow him. Ever since he touched my hand, I knew that near him I always must be, and nothing can keep him from me. He is my destiny. I love him, I love him, I love him. And where he goes,
I'm... It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking with Dorothy Marsick. She is the woman behind the musical Respect, a musical journey of women. It tells the story of women, specifically in her family, since 1900, using top 40 music. And she has given a great deal of thought to the lyrics and what these lyrics communicate to women through the years. And we would love for you to join the conversation as well. Is there a song that really defines you or that serves as the soundtrack of your life? You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can post on our Facebook page at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or you can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. And so, Dorothy, we were sort of stuck in that period of mostly codependence in the music, women singing about stories where they're not in control of their own destiny, or even choose not to be in control of their own destiny and are controlled by love. As you went through the years and you started listening to different songs, when did that start to change?
That started to change in the early 60s, about 1964, was the first song that was real pushback. Although there was a transitional song a few years before that, Sweet Talkin' Guy, because that was the first song that started to say, well, he's wonderful, you know, I love him and all that, but he's not so great, but I just can't help myself. So that was the beginning of, well, maybe this isn't as wonderful as I've been saying, and I will follow him, and Johnny Get Angry and all those songs. But then in 1964, the song You Don't Own Me came out. Leslie Gore sang it, and it really resonated. And in fact, you know, even to this day, it was on the First Wives Club. It was one of the theme songs. And it was, You Don't Own Me. I'm my own person. Let me be my own person. And that was followed by...
Well, let's listen to that one for just a few minutes.
Okay. I'm not just one of your many toys. You don't own me. Don't say I can't go with other boys.
Of You Don't Own Me. So that was in 1964, and that's a really radical departure.
It's completely radical. And it came out 1 year after the book The Feminine Mystique.
Well, and it comes from a source that you wouldn't think of as radical either. When you think about Leslie Gore, you do think about Johnny, and you think about It's My Party and all of that stuff. So it's surprising to hear her singing that.
And her singing it with such conviction, too. It was surprising, and it must have changed her career.
And I'm sure it really resonated with a lot of women as well. I sang that all the time when I was a teenager, although it was an oldie by then, of course. But so in your story that you tell in Respect, where does this music fall? Whose story are you telling?
Well, by this time, it's mine. It's mine and my cohorts and the women, girls and women that I hung around with. We have a scene where in some of the productions there's a pajama party and we sing through all of these 60s songs and then it moves into the You Don't Own Me. It's a moment that in the musical we've tied to looking at some of the other things that were going on in the 60s, the civil rights movement, because it was also African-Americans were pushing back in the same way that women were.
And how does the audience respond at this point? Because, I mean, we love that 50s music, the, you know, I Will Follow Him. That's a lot of fun. But at this point, what does the audience do?
Oh, they're really with it. I mean, they're so with the whole show. I mean, they're depending on the audience, sometimes they're cheering and sometimes they're just enraptured but quiet. And I've had so many discussions and emails from people because we've been doing this, 10 years now. And people say, this was my life. How did you know it was my life? I lived through all of this. And thank you for clarifying. I had one man who went, when I was doing the one woman show, who came to me afterwards and sent me a series of emails, and he said, my whole life I've been angry at my mother because she was angry and didn't raise me the way I wanted. But after watching your show, I understand my mother. She always wanted to be a doctor, and they didn't let her. She became a nurse, and she was just a helpmate to my father. And he said, watching your show, I now understand what my mother went through.
Wow.
And he said, what's different for me? The sky is bluer. The sun is brighter. That's pretty amazing.
Absolutely. Well, obviously the message is touching people and resonates with people. Somehow, the music that you've chosen heightens that impact. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think music, we hear it on a more visceral level. it goes directly to our emotions, or if you believe in a soul, and it goes around the intellect. I think that's true of art in general. And it touches us in a very deep place. And when all you have to do is hear a couple of notes from a song, and you're taken back to that place where you first experienced the music and it was very impactful for you. Now, what I've noticed in my research, that this tends to happen, you know, roughly from, you know, 12 to maybe 28, that the music you hear during that time and maybe into 30s is the most impactful, because you're being formed, you're really experiencing the world in a new way, and it just touches us in such a deep place. And it's wonderful to go back and to pull those emotions up again, because sometimes they've been hidden down there a long time.
I'm talking with Dorothy Marsick. She is the woman behind the musical Respect, a musical journey of women. Coming up in a few minutes, I'll talk with the director of the show that is touring Iowa this summer. We also want to hear from you if you want to join our conversation. What is the song that defines you? What is the soundtrack of your life? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's talk a little bit more about these revolutionary songs. We listened to You Don't Own Me, and you talked about having a pajama party in the show and singing through all of these different empowering songs. What are some of the other ones that are included?
Well, These Boots Are Made for Walking.
All right, we've got to listen to that.
Yeah, that is just amazing.
All right.
You keep saying you got something for me, something you call love, but confess, you've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin', and now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
All right, that's a little bit of These Boots Are Made for Walking, one of the great sing-along songs of all time. Does the audience sing along?
Oh, they do. They do. And I've had men tell me that was a song that really scared the males, which is kind of funny, I think. But women love that song.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think about singing that song when I was a teenager. One of our producers said she was obsessed with it when she was in seventh grade. And what do you think it does for a girl to sing along to a song like that, such a strong and powerful song? Is that role-playing that feeds into other areas of her life?
I think that you're onto something there, because it is, if you grew up singing all songs like Que Sera, Sera, and I Will Follow Him, and Johnny Get Angry, I Want a Caveman, I Want a Brave Man, it has to impact your brain. I'm sure somebody's done neurological studies about that, with the kind of music that people listen to, and I know that I've seen studies where they read certain things and it changes their brain pattern. So imagine girls growing up on the codependent versus the ones who are 10, 12, 14 who are singing along to These Boots Are Made for Walking. That's going to shape them in a much different way. And I think that's why you see the younger generation now, the women are stronger. They're independent. They, in fact, sometimes when mothers bring their daughters to my show, the daughters will look at the mothers and go, they weren't singing those songs seriously, were those? Like, I Will Follow Him? I mean, that's ironic, isn't it?
Right, right.
I can't even imagine it.
Well, it is. When I learned those songs and I would listen to oldie stations with my friends as a teenager, we would sing those songs ironically. I mean, it felt very campy, but it was entirely genuine.
Yes, yes. And it is hard once you get out of that and you are more independent, your own person. It is hard to imagine that somebody could have been that way and singing that song seriously.
You mentioned Que Sera, Sera, and I wonder, you have traveled the world with this show, and these are songs that were in the American Top 40. So how do these songs resonate with international audiences?
Well, that's the thing that shocked me, because I was afraid I would be singing songs that people had never heard of. But by and large, most of the songs people knew, and some of them they knew quite well. But the one song that wherever I went around the world, and I did this in South Africa and Israel and Australia, New Zealand and England, the one song that people would always sing along with was Que Sera Sera.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera.
A little bit of Que Sera Sera. Doris Day, the international language, I guess, of Doris Day, right? So that's the song that everyone everywhere knew?
Yes, and it's so interesting because it's a song that I always thought of as being external locus of control. You know, she never takes any responsibility. She's got to ask her mother and her teacher and her boyfriend, what should I do? What should I be? It's very different from These Boots Are Made for Walking.
Right. Right. Well, Doris Day sold it, I think. So.
She did. Well, it was for that time, too. It fit in with that time, and it's a beautiful song.
We've asked people to join the conversation with the soundtrack of their lives, and you can send us an email with yours, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, tweet us at IPRTalk, or give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can also post on our Facebook page. Jake is on the line in Olwine. Hi, Jake.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your story?
Well, my story is I'm kind of horning in on the women's side of this, but a song that changed my life dramatically was Cats in the Cradle, you know, where you ignore your kids and you're on with your life and everything. And I didn't, it was too late for me to change it, but that really had an impact on me. And maybe there's a man's angle here. You can make a musical out of a man's angle.
Right. Or Jake, maybe you can.
Well, perhaps.
So, Cat Stevens, Cat in the Cradle?
Yes, yeah, about the man that ignores his kids and is busy in his life and whatnot, and it's too late, you know, his kids starting
to grind him. I think it was Harry Chapin.
Yeah.
All right, sorry about that.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to be morning on your conversation.
Generation.
Yeah, Jake, thank you so much for your call, but that's an interesting thing to look at. It would be interesting to see how men's songs also changed.
I actually did that research.
Did you?
That's for another show. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you'll have to come back and do that with us.
From the trajectory that women went on. But he brings up a very good point. That's a wonderful song.
Yeah. So as time goes on, we've talked a little bit about the songs from the 60s. How about the 70s? What are we hearing?
Well, the 70s, we started to get, after the anger of These Boots Are Made for Walking and You Don't Own Me, the denial was stripped off, and we got into the phase that I call cynicism. And one of the best songs from that, because it was about why should I have love, because they're just going to hurt me anyway. So my favorite song from that is What's Love Got to Do with It.
All right, well, let's listen to a little bit of What's Love Got to Do with It.
Touch of your hand makes my pulse react. That it's only the thrill of boy meeting girl, opposites attract. It's physical, only logical. You must try to ignore that it means more than.
What's Love Got to Do with It? And that is, I guess I've never thought about it as a cynical song, but it is a cynical song.
Yes, it is, definitely. but a great one.
And so at that point in your musical, what story are you telling?
Well, I'm telling the story of my own learning, getting out of this idea that Prince Charming is going to come and rescue me, which were a lot of those songs before. And it's the idea that I can't count on that anymore, that that can't be the solution to my life. I think that's what this cynical phase helps us look at.
Well, and that women can engage in a relationship on their own terms.
Yes, exactly.
And even set the rules.
And that's right. And that's the leads us into the final phase, which was in inner strength, where I've got I can look to myself for strength. I don't have to lean on a man. I can be, if I want to, I can lean on him and he can lean on me, but as an equal, not always waiting for him to just smile at me or touch me or and that he's in complete control.
That's so interesting. We're going to continue this conversation in a moment. We'd love to hear from you as well with the stories that have changed your life, influenced the way you think, or maybe just when you heard it, you thought, that's who I am. This speaks to me. So give us a call, 866-780-9100. We'll also talk more about Respect, A Musical Journey of Women, and the production that is touring Iowa this summer. I'm talking with Dorothy Marsick, the woman behind Respect, A Musical Journey of Women. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about Respect, A Musical Journey of Women. It's a musical that has traveled the country. It also first traveled the world as a one-woman show by Dorothy Marsick. And you're welcome to join our conversation as well with your email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also post on our Facebook page. And we're going to focus for a little while on the production that is traveling the state of Iowa this summer. And Dorothy, I mean, this show grew into this much larger musical out of your one-woman show. Give me a little bit of a timeline of how it has traveled around the country.
Well, I started, the very first presentation I gave was in December of 1999, and then I was doing the one-woman show. I must have done it 100, 150 times in the course of several years, and then I turned it into, everybody said, you have to turn this into a musical, so I turned it into a four-woman show, which we debuted January of 2003, and we did quite a few gigs. It was coming out of Nashville, where I lived at the time, and we did a lot of gigs in Nashville and some around the country. And then I took the show to Florida in 2004 to showcase it, and I got two producers who wanted to produce it commercially. And so it opened in July of 2004 in West Palm Beach, and it's almost played continuously since then in different cities. It's played, I think, 41 cities by now, including several in Australia.
Wow. And this summer, a production has been traveling around the state of Iowa, performed by Iowa Summer Rep. And Eric Forsyth is the director of this production of Respect, A Musical Journey of Women. And he is with me now. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Charity. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Eric.
Thank you so much for being here today. And tell me how you chose Respect for this summer performance.
Well, we were looking for a production which could tour. As you probably know, our theater was flooded out 5 years ago, and the repairs are actually being completed this summer. So we're forced out of our space. So we needed a show which could tour, and we looked around. Let's do something popular that people would love and that would have meaning and resonance that we could be proud of. And so Respect was the natural choice.
Well, and we've been hearing a lot about all of these messages for women, the music, speaking to women, and I understand that the audiences are both male and female, but I'm a little surprised to have a male director of this performance. Why did you want to do this, Eric?
Well, it's important stuff. These are important issues. They're important to me. They're important to my wife. They're important to my kids. They're important to my mother. You know, it's important stuff. And men need to hear it at least as much as women need to hear it. There are affirmations here that there are aspects of understanding, empathy that people just need to get. And seeing and hearing these songs in a new context, which is what this play does, is I think important, and it's such a trip of fun at the same time.
Now, you've been traveling around the state. What kind of a response have you been getting?
Well, pretty delirious, I'd say.
That's nice.
People jump to their feet before the end of the show, and they start clapping along and singing along. There's huge tears and hugs and the best thing I ever saw and that kind of it's consistent with other productions, as I understand, and I'm just glad that we can do it here in Iowa.
So in the show that that you've been doing this summer, is there a moment where you find the audience just can't contain itself anymore?
I think what's from my perspective, what makes it work so wonderfully is the context that you have these songs, which maybe you never really thought of, but do get under your skin. They're popular, and you hear them, and maybe you don't really think about them. And yet here's a context where suddenly the words take on a different meaning. The music sounds different. We should talk about the projections. There are projections behind the actors at the same time, slides, which also create an ironic subtext sometimes. So we're talking about Stand By Your Man, and it's a series of men and women who didn't stand together very long. and suddenly the audience gets it, you know, and they start listening in a new way. And so I guess it's not any one moment per se, but a whole series, a build that finally at the end is just so powerful. It's palpable.
And you've been hearing a lot from audiences after the fact, people sending in emails and just wanting to keep the conversation going.
Sure.
Is that unusual?
Well, Summer Rep is a great theater, I have to say.
Yeah.
we do good work, and so people do that. But there is a different kind of response, I suppose, here, just because the music is so ingrained in people's psyches over the years, and exactly that. They say, wow, who knew? Or it changes my life perspective on things. I'm going to listen more. And that's wonderful.
That is interesting. And Dorothy, I'm curious about that because people love musicals, you know, and often we learn the songs to musicals. We go to musicals because we know and love the music. But in this case, everybody knows the music going into it. Do you think that that is a shortcut to connecting with the audience?
Well, yes, it is if you do it in the right way. I mean, what I tried to do is exactly what Eric was talking about, to create a context, because a lot of these, you know, what they call jukebox musicals, pick a series of songs and then find some story to fit in with the songs they've chosen. But mine was based on research and really looking at how music was depicting women and what were the most popular songs. And that story really resonates with people because people have lived through it, or they've had a relative who lived through it, or in their own life they've experienced it. And it is putting that music in a different context, exactly as Eric says. That was my intention from the beginning, was to help people see something different, because then you learn. I made a conscious choice in the very beginning only to use top 40 songs, and only top 40 songs that were iconic, so people would immediately connect with it. But then you put it in that context and they're like, oh my God, I never realized what this song was saying before.
Wow. Interesting. Well, we've had so many people who want to get in on this conversation. I want to read you a few emails. This is from Barb in Ames. She says, I was born in 1956 and was a bit of a rebel growing up. Although I loved pop music and the various melodies, I didn't like a lot of the messages. So when I sang Que Sera Sera to my daughters, now independent women at the ages of 26 and 28, I changed it very emphatically to Que Sera Sera, you'll be what you want to be. The future is yours to see.
Bravo.
This one is from Kathy. She said, I loved the song You're No Good by Linda Ronstadt. In the 70s, there were several powerful women singers that spoke to me: Bonnie Raitt, Stevie Nicks, Emmylou Harris. And this one is from Terry in Barefoot Bay, Florida. I feel that Harper Valley PTA was reflective of forward progress for women. That's not one that makes it into your show, but that's a...
Yeah, there are so many songs to choose from. I had to make difficult choices. So, yeah, it's not in there.
but certainly tells a compelling story. And let's get to the phones. Jim is on the line in Spencer. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good morning.
Hi. What would you like to bring to the conversation?
Well, you know, I'm thinking about Man of La Mancha with, you know, Dulcinea, or plays like The Fantastics, and I'm realizing that these kind of shows aren't being written today, that probably men aren't putting women on the same pedestal that they used to, and maybe that's just as well. Mm. So I think, you know, from the man's perspective, I've seen a lot of change as well.
I have to say, from Man of La Mancha to Dream the Impossible Dream, when I did the research on men's music, that song was iconic for one of the phases men went through, which was about, a lot of their songs were about vision, creating a vision. And that's it's such a beautiful song.
And
but that's different from the comment he was saying. I agree with
right.
you.
And do you think that there has been a change to how women are described in love songs written by men?
Well,
or sung by
yes,
men?
There's, well, you know, yes and no. I mean, I just did the very recent update of the women's music. I have to do the update of the men's music because you've got in the rap and hip hop, you've got a whole section there that the women are singing codependent and the men are basically going along with it. But then there also are a lot of songs where men are respecting and treating women more equally.
You know, I have been putting together a playlist for my own personal use for girls that are empowering songs, because I'm a girls on the run coach, and I was looking for songs that I could play that the girls could sing along with and feel good about. And when I was looking for music, I found that so many of these empowering songs are about love and are about breakups. But there is a collection over the years of songs that are not focused on relationships, that are just about being empowering and being strong.
Mm-hmm. Did you have Stupid Girls on your list?
No.
Oh, but Pink a few years ago. You should listen to it and see if you think it's an empowering song or not.
And what do you think?
I think it is, because it's, you know, it's asking women to rise above this stupid stereotypes.
Well, and I'm curious with recent music. I mean, there are some girl power anthems in just the last couple of years. I think about Katy Perry's Roar is one of those. Do you ever feel inclined to include even more recent things?
Well, we do have this one's for the girls is the most recent. That was from maybe 2005 or 2006. But that would be actually a good idea to include some of the more recent ones. I like that.
Let's go back to the phones. Bobbert is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Bobbert.
Good morning.
Hi, what did you want to share?
Enjoy your show.
Thanks.
A couple of things came to mind when we were talking about this subject. The anti-woman song, I think, in the early 60s was Jack Jones' Hey Little Girl.
Oh, you mean, hey, little girl, comb your hair, wear your makeup, that one?
Yeah, exactly. Your man's coming
yeah,
home.
Yeah, Wives and Lovers. Actually, I've got a new musical that I've used that one in it. It is an old era song.
I know the ladies I go out with, they really laugh and joke at it. And it was, yeah. We all laugh and joke at it. But for me personally, just a little anecdote, for a lot of men, in the early 60s, I became a single parent. My wife left me with two children, babies. And I had to grow up and become a woman real quick and a mother. Mm. And that was very empowering to me. So now I identify with women. And for lack of a better word, I'm a women's liver as well. Mm. So thank God for all miracles.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Bob.
Thank you.
You betcha.
So your life was dramatically changed by this musical, Dorothy. You mentioned that you had a good singing voice for a management professor.
Yeah.
You've become a playwright. How has your career changed?
Well, I was teaching full-time at Vanderbilt, and this the one-woman show was really taking off, and I was starting to develop the four-woman show, and I realized one day that I wasn't able to put the time into it that it was going to need to really take off. So I quit my Vanderbilt job to focus on that. And I had been doing a lot of management consulting, which I said no to almost all of it, and just really focused on that. And within a couple years, it went commercial. And then I was traveling so much back and forth to New York that I got a place up there now. I just bought a place in New York, so I'm here full time and just finishing up an MFA, even though I had a doctorate and I was a professor before. But I'm just in love with theater and what theater can how it can connect with people. I'm sure Eric has much more experience with this, but really in a way that gives insights and empowers people and touches them and helps change their lives. It's wonderful.
Well, this musical, Respect, A Musical Journey of Women, I mentioned it's been touring the state this summer. And Eric, you have two performances left, right?
That's right. So tonight and
Friday night.
Friday night.
So you're
correct.
Performing tonight in Washington, Iowa at the Washington right. Community Center, and then Friday night at the Indian Hills Community College in Ottumwa, Iowa. I know that a lot of your shows have been sold out or even oversold. Is there any room left?
They have been oversold. I think they've sold out at Indian Hills, but there are always no shows. So
all right.
I would show up at the door.
So if you're dying to see it, check it out. You'll go out with a bang this week.
And a big smile.
Right. And we're nearly out of time, but I've saved one song that I know is a huge highlight of the show for the end. So, Dorothy, we're going to go out today with I Will Survive. Tell me about the role that this song plays in the show and how it connects with audiences.
Well, it's based on a story of my Aunt Janelle and Uncle Vernie, who walked out on her for another woman and then came back a couple years later. And one of the actresses sings a song as if my Aunt Janelle, you know, that I can get along without a man. And the audience by this time is going crazy. I'm sure Eric has found the same thing. Because it's been the build, as Eric mentions.
Yep.
And this is it's a breakout song.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here today, Dorothy.
Yes, thank you, Charity. And thank you, Eric.
Certainly. Thank you for your wonderful piece.
Dorothy Marsick is the woman behind Respect, A Musical Journey of Women. And Eric Forsyth, thank you so much for being here today.
Great pleasure.
Eric Forsyth is the director of Respect, the production that has been traveling Iowa this summer, performed by Iowa Summer Rep. And we'll go out with Gloria Gaynor and I Will Survive. Talk of Iowa is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Technical support today from Julie Englander. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow we'll talk about surrogacy, an alternate way of starting a family.